This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Alfred Conaway, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vanderberg. So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the King.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports podcast produced by two or more African-Americans who are not affiliated with a major network. Happy New Year, everybody. First show of 2014. Good to have the whole team back. Marcus, of course, and I've been holding the show down for the past few weeks, and now Big Nasty Alfred Cullowan is back. So, when the Big Nasty's in the building, it's like getting Compton and Long Beach together. You know you're in trouble.
It's great to be back. Great to be back from the motherland, where I had a great time. I did miss you guys dearly, and I have souvenirs whenever we see each other again. But it was a lot of fun being in Liberia, and I have plans to go back at least once a year. And I met a lot of family and ate a lot of good food. And again, it's great to be back. And I'm still nasty. Can you believe that?
I almost called you last night, by the way, Alfred. I was driving back home and I had to pee. And I was driving past your hood last night. And I bet Alfred's home. But I didn't.
Did you need to use my bathroom?
I didn't feel like stopping.
I think you should have. That would have made for an interesting story.
It would have. It was 10 o'clock. I was like, what's Tovina? I gotta use the bathroom. But I didn't,
like right in my backyard.
Yeah, I didn't feel like stopping. So
what was the best part about going back to the motherland and seeing your peoples and your kin folks?
Just being amongst the people. It's like there's not a lot of tourists. It didn't feel like a vacation as much as it felt like when I was in college. Like you're kind of cut off from the outside world, but you've got your own thing going on. You're in your little bubble and you make your new little community. It was very similar. And just being amongst people in Liberia and hearing them speak, which is exactly how my parents spoke. So, I completely understood them, even though they speak this simple English that, it's English, but if you're not really paying attention to what they're saying, it sounds like a different language. But it was just fun. It was fun being around people who reminded me of my parents, who reminded me of my relatives, and just learning about new cultures. I've never really been outside of the country, and that really opened my eyes to a lot of different things.
I think the more interesting question, Marcus, is if we could get somebody from the other side and see how they reacted to Big Nasty. Because I think them seeing him is probably a bigger culture shock than him going to Africa.
That's true.
I agree. I was asked probably at least once a day when I was there for 2 weeks. I was asked if I was a Marine. And, I had them say, no, I'm not a Marine. Revolution does not start here. So there were some big guys there, my frame, but the average frame in Liberia, especially unfortunately due to health issues and whatnot, is pretty small, not nearly my size. So when I pretty much stood out like a sore thumb, and I would get looks and whatnot.
And you were wearing a three-piece suit the whole time.
Yeah, that too.
What was the weather like over there?
Oh, it was hot. It was summer. It was summer in Liberia. It felt like humidity of 100 degrees every day. And there were parts like in the red light district when we were going to actually one of the really nice parts of Liberia, Carisbrook. We had to go past the red light district. And there are areas there that they don't really have a waste system set up. So they would just burn the trash. And that combined with the CO2, carbon, and then the body heat, it would feel like it was like 130 degrees. And mind you, this was in a city. Like where because you have to drive. There are people in the street. So that was one of the big things I had to get used to is driving around in LA and just seeing cars. When you're in Liberia, people are in the streets trying to sell you stuff, and you have to just kind of navigate your way through that. So that's part of that jungle.
Wow.
Were you able to keep up with any sports while you was over there?
I was. I did the best that I could. I had limited access to the internet, but when I did get on the internet, I was very pleased. It seemed like all these crazy NFL games happened when I was gone. Yeah. The moment I left, I was really happy to see my Packers pull off their win over the Bears, because when I saw they lost to the Steelers, I pretty much assumed they were out of the playoff race. But then when I got access again to the internet, I was able to see the whole board of scores and see what my Packers are still in this thing. And then when I saw that they beat the Bears, that was just ridiculous. And to be honest, they had TNA down in Liberia. They had TNA Impact. There was this channel called Supersport, and Supersport apparently has a deal with TNA Impact, so I did see some of that for a little comfort food. But as far as other sports, I had to wait until I came back to America to really get caught up with most sports and sporting events and whatnot. But for the most part, I'm caught up.
There you go, Nate. TNA in Africa.
TNA is worldwide. TNA is a worldwide international company.
Yet it can't outdraw Main Event, so what does that tell you?
It's like a big action movie that's like a $50 million action movie and makes $200 million internationally, but only $10 million domestically. Like, that's TNA. TNA is like the abduction.
$10
movie.
Domestically.
Like Abduction with Jacob from Twilight. Y'all remember that movie? That's like TNA. TNA is like The Last Airbender, which bombed here in America but made some money overseas. That's TNA.
Get a little headway over the seas. Yeah, yeah. Like, I get that.
Yeah, you know, so it's international. You got to open your arms to the world. And we got to open our arms to the new year. But first, we're going to take a look back at some of the things that happened while we were away. Last week, we had the Best Of Show. I hope you guys enjoyed that. But again, like we said, lots of football being played. We have a new national champion, the final champion of the BCS era. And I got to tell you, if that's the way it went out, you know, I was not a big proponent of the BCS, but they gave us a hell of a show on the way out, Marcus.
They did. It was quite the entertaining game. Florida State pulled away at the very end to win the national championship, thanks to Jameis Winston, who celebrated his 20th birthday on Monday. So not a bad birthday to turn 20 and win a national title and to cap off a undefeated season. And the big takeaway from after the game, unfortunately, was Jameis Winston's post-game interviews, where he sounded like a 20-year-old from Alabama. And for some reason, this set off some, I don't want to say racist tweets, but questionable tweets. One in particular from AJ McCarron's mother, Dee Dee, who made a comment that said, "Am I listening to English?" in reference to Jameis Winston. But, you know, Jameis Winston is, I don't like speaking now, and I do podcasts. So I can only imagine being 20 after winning a national title, having all that emotion. But if you listen to him, doesn't he remind you of Ray Lewis Jr. when he speaks?
I didn't think about that, but now that I think about it, kind of.
If you go back and listen to his post game speech he did right after the game, and you can tell he's a natural leader, he's a natural motivator, and I can see why those guys, even though he's a freshman, why they gravitate towards him and go out and play for him, because he just something, he has that it factor when it comes to leadership.
The AJ McCarron stuff with his mom, that stuff was just kind of made me scratch my head, because, again, I don't think she's prejudiced, because one of the things, if you haven't learned anything from watching the Full Letter Network over the past 6 months, is that AJ McCarron is almost as much of a saint as Tim Tebow. I think they skip on water together. Because first he had the little black girl that had a problem, he saved her in the hospital.
Hold on. Here's the difference, though. AJ McCarron, he's having sex. Tim Tebow's not.
Not that we know of.
Not that we know of.
Yeah, not that we know. Now that he's not in the league anymore, you don't know what Tebow doing.
I saw
Bobby Petrino.
Tebow was at CES where I was this week. I had to listen to a 45-minute press conference about headphones, and Tim Tebow was like the spokesperson for it. It was soul headphones, and the questions had to be headphone-related. You couldn't ask him any other questions except for fucking headphones. Continue on.
You should have got creative, though, Mark.
I thought about it, but I'm also representing my job. I don't need to be.
If you were to throw these headphones, do you think you could throw those headphones farther than 20 yards?
Yeah, no, that's all right. I like my job better than I like Tim Tebow.
But, McCarron. And then they had the other story with the boy that had Asperger's or something? That's the.
Oh, Red Rocket
team.
Yeah, Red Rocket. Or Red. Yeah, it is Red Rocket.
Yeah, and the way AJ brought him into the team. So, yeah, I don't think that she's prejudiced. I just think that was an ignorant statement made out of sour grapes because her son wasn't playing for the national championship.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. You have to look at it from a competition standpoint that she's loyal to Alabama and that she was just taking a shot at somebody who was in a position she felt and a lot of people felt that Alabama should have been in.
I look forward to seeing what Jameson and boys can do next year, you know, because it's like he's already got to be a favorite again for Heisman next year. I think this kid is just done a lot of growing this year, both on and off the field. And I think he's going to be that much more of a leader next year.
He's not going to win the Heisman next year, by the way. He set the bar too high. The man went undefeated in his first year and won a national title. Florida State could lose one game, and they would find a way to nitpick and give the Heisman to someone else. So I think he's, you know, he's one and done in terms of the Heisman race.
Yeah, Heisman voting is a lot like the Oscars in that they're very picky and choosy over who they give it to multiple times because they don't want to come off as being beholden to anybody or not being smart enough to discern new athletes and new stories and whatnot. So it's going to be very difficult. Marcus said if they lose one game, even if they go unbeaten, they're going to find a reason to maybe skip out and give it to somebody else.
Yeah, plus he's not Johnny Football. He's not sexy like that, quote-unquote, pause. Speaking of my man, Johnny Football, he's saying goodbye to Texas A&M, but one of the other big stories of the past week or so is somebody moving into the state, and that's Charlie Strong. I think that was a really – I don't know if I'm going to say it was surprising or shocking, but it did kind of raise my eyebrows a little bit, Marcus. I think it's a really good hire, but, you know, I don't know how Longhorn Nation has taken to that announcement.
Well, considering he's the first African-American coach of a male team at the university in its 100-plus-year history now, no, it doesn't surprise me that there's some Texas fans who are questioning why he was hired. Red McCombs is questioning why he's even a head coach and why he's not a coordinator or a positions coach. So, yeah, no, I mean, nothing surprises me when it comes to Texas and race relations, but I think he, you know, if given the opportunity, I think he can do a fine job for Texas. And he's got a loaded deck in terms of recruiting base, resources. So, I mean, he really has everything he needs in terms of the accessories. He just needs to start recruiting his own players and going from there.
Yeah, and the thing that kind of concerns me about Charlie Strong coming to Texas is that there it takes a certain type of coach to coach Texas. It's a different ballgame over there because there are so many political circles in Texas. You have to galvanize them all in order to keep them off your back, in order to move forward with that team. And the fact that there's so many boosters already starting to speak out against this hire, ignorant as it is, and of course it's something that I don't agree with, it just kind of makes me worry that is he already behind the eight ball in trying to get these guys together and really play the politic game with the University of Texas?
Matt Brown was a so-so coach, but he was a damn good politician when it came to working not only the media, but working the boosters. I think Charlie Strong is a good coach, but I think he's going to be a so-so politician when it comes to playing that game.
And that's not going to cut it. If that's true, that's not going to cut it in Texas. You have to be a politician.
I mean, at Louisville, he wasn't exactly media friendly. The media and Charlie Strong didn't really have a great relationship. So you're talking about having to do media for the Longhorn Network, et cetera. I think that's where the issues will come. Not so much what he does with the team on the field, but sort of how he handles all the obligations off the field.
And you talk about, you know, the political game and the media game. He's going into a state with Art Briles at Baylor, and I think the bigger challenge, Kevin Sumlin at Texas A&M, got the swagger-copter, has, you know, that cachet of coaching Johnny Manziel. He's been in the state longer. I think Texas A&M is going to be one of the bigger obstacles for Charlie Strong having success in Texas.
And no. I mean, Texas is still number one in terms of the cachet stool in the state. It's always going to be the Longhorns. I mean, A&M, yeah, it's been cute that they've been nice for 2 years now, but they don't have the history to compare to University of Texas.
And you got to think, Texas is playing in the Big 12, which has been as depleted of a conference as any conference in college football, to where Mizzou is out of the way and Texas A&M is out of the way. And once he gets those players playing, and hopefully the hope is that he's able to build a competitive team with Texas for years to come, he's going to win the Big 12, or he should and should be expected to win the Big 12 for the next 5-6 years.
Yeah, I mean, Texas is always going to be there. You could roll out of bed in Texas and hit on some four-star recruits. And even Mack Brown, even his down years weren't really down years by any other program standards. But I do think in terms of the recruits, I think Strong is going to have his work cut out for him going up against Bryce and Sumlin, you know, in state. You know, it's going to be very intriguing to see who can get the hearts and minds of the state of Texas, you know, as we go forward 2014 and beyond.
I mean, and Baylor's another school. Baylor is has a history of shitty athletics across the board. I just don't see I think you're buying way too much into the recent success of Baylor and Texas A&M that they can somehow overthrow the cachet Texas has. I just don't see it.
I'm not saying overthrow, but I'm saying the gap is much more narrow, especially with these kids who don't have the history. Who don't have, you know, Vince Young is a distant memory to a lot of these kids.
But, I mean, Texas is like the school in the state of Texas. I think kids know that Texas is where you want to be in terms of playing football. And especially if you want to continue on to the NFL, the Longhorns are putting a lot more guys in the NFL than A&M and Baylor are. So I think that's the big picture, is that these guys are going to college to get to the NFL. They're not going to college to win 10 games and then go off and do, you know, pharmaceutical sales. Their goal is to get to the NFL, and Texas is the best way to get there.
But here's the thing with Baylor and Texas A&M that I will say is that they each had two just all-world superstars, transcendent crossover superstars, RG3 with Baylor and Johnny Manziel with Texas A&M, that had like a Doug Flutie effect, and I think are going to have an effect for years to come. And that's something that those two schools, which I agree with Marcus that they are upstart schools, that you're going to have to wait and see whether or not they'll be successful long term. But I do think they have enough, just based on the success of RG3 and Manziel, both Heisman winners, to build on that and become players in the college football game for decades.
I agree. I think it's going to be very interesting. Like I said, I see all three schools having varying degrees of success, but all being successful. I mean, Texas, like I said, they're the big dog, but they're not the only game in town anymore. It's like, you know, McDonald's is still the best, but you got Burger King and Wendy's nipping at your heels. Switching gears to the National Football League. So Saturday we got Saints, Seahawks, Colts, Patriots, and then Sunday 49ers, Panthers, and Chargers, Broncos. I think 49ers, Panthers is the most intriguing matchup. What's your most intriguing matchup, Brother Marcus?
I'm going Chargers Broncos. Based the way San Diego controlled that game a few weeks ago when they went to Denver, and you know, if there's one team, I guess, that has sort of figured out how to control Denver and has the ability to run the ball, they have two different running backs in Matthews and Danny Woodhead to keep Denver off the field, it'd be San Diego. So something about this Chargers team, the fact that they're even in the playoffs, number one, and they got past Cincinnati, it just seems like this is one of those years where San Diego makes it to the AFC Conference Finals, and we're like, how did the Chargers get here?
Yeah, I don't know what's gotten into Phillip Rivers like the last 6-7 weeks.
The bolo ties.
No, the whole season, the man's thrown over 30 touchdowns.
Oh, he's a renaissance. Him and Antonio Gates look like the two from 2005, and it's been
fascinating
to watch. And Ryan Matthews has actually turned into a top 10 running back after all this time. So I think it's just everything coming together. And I'm curious to see how that game plays out.
Yeah, and it's very similar between Phillip Rivers' success and Jay Cutler's / Josh McCown with Mark Trestman, and then in San Diego with Mike McCoy, is they've employed these systems where they get the ball out quickly. Both those teams have terrible offensive lines, but the coaches, and this is great coaching, were able to mask that by having these higher percentage short throws, and that's definitely helped not only keep them upright, but put these great stats in this era of offense. And I'm with Marcus in that I like the Chargers-Broncos game as the most intriguing, just because Peyton Manning is the only quarterback in this entire world who can break an NFL touchdown record in the era of passing and it not mean a thing. This is why he came to the Broncos. And I really do think the Chargers are going to win that game, because if you've seen the last three Super Bowl champions, their teams got hot late and soared to the playoffs. And that's the Chargers. I really do think the Chargers and the Niners could end up in the Super Bowl.
All right, well, let's go ahead and make some picks on these games. So both of you guys are picking the Chargers?
I am. Sure. I'm going San Diego. Superchargers.
All right. I'm going to be the contrarian. I'm going to still ride with Peyton Manning. I think the Broncos, even though they're coming in a little bit nicked up, they got home field, and I think they learned from last season. So I'm going to go with the Broncos in a close game. Let's go with the other AFC matchup, Colts and Patriots. Brother Marcus, who you got?
Pats.
Alfred?
Yeah, I've got the Pats going away.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I'm still kind of dumbfounded at even though they had a bunch of injuries during the game, how in the hell did the Chiefs let that slip away?
You know what? Now, I'm not going to look at the bad side. Andrew Luck is just one of those players who's designed to never give up. A team with Andrew Luck will never just quit, because we've seen it, what, three times this season where he's come back from double-digit deficits. So I had a feeling in the back of my mind watching that game that the Colts are going to at least make a run.
All right, let's go to the NFC. Saints and Seahawks. Is everybody rolling with Seattle in this one?
Seattle.
You know what? I'm taking the Saints. I think Seattle plays around a little bit too much offensively. I think offensively they're not as consistent. And if they get behind early, I don't think they have what it takes in terms of weapons. I know Percy Harvin is just coming back, but they're not going to be the type of team that can rally back. And I think with revenge in mind and playing way better defense than they ever have, the Saints are equipped to beat the Seahawks.
Just okay, one thing about that game, and I think it will be a factor, is the weather. They're expecting not only rain, but heavy winds. And I don't know how it works with that stadium in terms of the wind, but I think between the weather and the fans, I just see Seattle, you know, controlling the ball and Marshawn Lynch doing beast mode things.
Yeah, I see Seattle advancing as well. But I will say the Saints, if there is one thing in their favor, they finally got that monkey off their back about going on the road. So, you know, if confidence means anything in the game of football, you know, they at least have that. So I think it'll be a good game, but Seattle ultimately will pound out the win. And finally, in the Beefhead of Flair Bowl at Bank of America Stadium, the 49ers come into town to take on Ace Boogie and the Panthers. Who you got, Marcus?
49ers.
Yeah, I got the 49ers too. I just think you look at the matchups, and a lot of matchups favor the Carolina Panthers. It's just that, and I said this on our Facebook page, is that I love the Carolina Panthers to possibly be a Super Bowl team, but only if they stayed away from that bye, because they're a young team, and you've seen in years past, that bye week, a lot of teams come out flat, and for the Panthers, a young team, and Cam Newton and his playoff debut, to hear about how great they are for 2 weeks before finally going to the playoffs against a quarterback who's been there before and been to the Super Bowl before in Cam or Colin Kaepernick, I just think the Carolina Panthers are going to tighten up a little bit, and the 49ers, the 49ers are on a mission, and the Carolina Panthers basically should be happy to be there.
I am going to go with the home team, with the Carolina Panthers, because I believe in Cam Newton. I believe in this defense.
You can go ahead and believe in him. Go right ahead.
I mean, you can make the argument that Cam Newton has been playing the best quarterback, the best out of all these young quarterbacks for the season.
Wait, who are you putting in this list? Because his numbers have regressed this season. So who are you putting in this list?
In terms of the young quarterbacks, we're talking about Andrew Luck. We're talking about RG3. We're talking about that grouping that he came in with.
You could make that argument, especially because we shouldn't just look at the numbers. The numbers have regressed for the right reasons. And
give
that Cam Newton
give me Russell
taking
Wilson
over, the team.
Over Cam Newton.
Oh, I would take Cam Newton over Russell Wilson in a heartbeat. Russell Wilson is a touchdown-dependent player, and as much as he does have that will to win, if you look at his numbers, he'll go like 11 for 18 for like 100 yards and 3 touchdowns. Those are his like stat lines on a regular basis. And Cam Newton is somebody who could take over a game by himself.
And Cam Newton doesn't have his share of under 200. I mean, look at his game log from this year for Cam Newton. He's had a share of Russell Wilson quote unquote games in terms of not really passing the ball and being dependent on sort of managing the game and not making turnovers.
But that's what he had to do in order for that team to win, because he's got so much talent on defense that are able to play with the lead. So once he gets that lead, he doesn't have to go off script and throw the ball a bunch of times. I mean, mind you, this is a man who, when he came in as a rookie, broke the rookie passing record. He's absolutely capable of putting out big stats, but clearly that didn't work in terms of having the franchise win.
And this is why I'm picking my NFC championship game is in terms of projecting ahead. I'm going with Seattle and Carolina, because I think Cam and Russell Wilson have been playing the best at that position in the NFC. And Cap, I love Cap. I think when it's all said and done, he might be the best of this bunch. But this year, especially, you know, over the last month or so, I've just been more impressed with what I've seen out of Cam Newton with the leadership from that position. You know, I think it's all come together for him this season. The numbers haven't been astonishing like they were in his rookie season, but they haven't had to be. You know, the wins are there. Even with the way the 49ers have been playing, I love their defense. I love their attitude. But something tells me not to sleep on Cam, not to sleep on these boys in Carolina. And I think that, is San Francisco the favorite?
Yes.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, I'm going with the home dog then. I'm going with the home dog in the Panthers. Did you realize that three out of the four remaining quarterbacks in the NFC are of a darker hue?
Of the chocolate persuasion?
Yes. You've come a long way.
I love this stat. People always say the Super Bowl's never been won outside the pocket, whatever that means. But this could be the year where we see the Super Bowl won outside the pocket. I mean, I don't think the chances have ever been better, because Russell Wilson is favored. Cam Newton is a two-seed. Colin Kaepernick should be there out of all the teams. So you never know.
And you have if the Colts find some way to get past the Patriots, you know, Luck is can do some things with his feet as well.
It's funny, and he has the same 40 time as Cam Newton, but people don't look at Andrew Luck as outside the pocket. And I hear all the time when they describe his athleticism, they say, he is sneakily athletic. He's surprisingly athletic. Why is it a surprise? If you look at what this guy did at the combine, it shouldn't be a surprise. The guy is an athlete.
Don't you know the code words by now, Albert?
Yeah, oh, I know the code words, all right.
You know, Andrew Luck is a gym rat who works hard and is very dedicated to his craft.
He's got a high motor.
He's got a high
motor. No way. To be fair. No, wait. Hold on. To be fair, I have never heard the word gym rat and Andrew Luck used together in a sentence. I know the point you're making, but they haven't used that for Andrew Luck.
Yeah, I do believe I've heard high motor in Salma too, though.
Oh, I've definitely heard high motor with Andrew Luck.
Cam Newton is a freak of nature character issues.
He's a gifted athlete with natural abilities. God-given talent.
And a phony smile. Oh, the racism is killing me. I just don't know. Boo. By the way, I got so many comments about that interview. Like, people love that interview. Like, I think that might be like, God forbid, Marcus Vandenberg ever passes away, like, in his career retrospective. I hope that interview makes it into, like, the package they play on CNN.
It oh, won't. My God.
Or BET.
Marcus Vandenberg.
Oh, speaking of BET, right, we got a story in segment four for BET.
I saw that, yeah. I want to talk
kind
about
of a callback that. Segment, too.
That story too. That story involved, of the four employees mentioned in the story that we'll talk about later, I worked for two of those people directly, so we can talk about that story.
Wow. We got the inside scoop with Marcus Vandenberg. What else we got? We got a lot of stuff coming up, man.
We got a Las Vegas recap.
Yep, Vegas recap. Did you happen to go by any establishments, Brother Marcus, and get any updates or affidavits?
No, I didn't. I didn't stop by the Luxor this time.
That's a shame.
It's a shame for you too.
Yeah. Next time you go to Vegas, I want you to go to that particular establishment, Alfred, and test out your theory.
Oh, I will.
I think they're just waiting. They're just waiting to lure you back into the trap.
They'll have it all nice and set up for me as soon as I reach my hand out.
Burned by the fire. But yeah, that's the story to talk about. We got a lot of great stuff to talk about in the ringside wrap. And coming up next, we have the return of the list, and we got some New Year's resolutions for your favorite sports figures and maybe for one of the Kings as well. So stick and stay. More Kings of Sport right after the break.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport. To get in touch with the show, follow us on Twitter at KOSPOD, KOS_POD. That's KOSPOD on Twitter. Welcome back to the Kings of Sport. Happy New Year, everybody. It's the Godfather here with Big Nasty and Brother Unicorn. For those of you that went back and listened to the Best Of show, I appreciate that. And now you know, and knowing is half the battle. But we are going to bring back one of our favorite segments, one of our favorite activities from last year, I guess you could say, and that's the list. That's where we bring out a topic and, the three of us kind of to come up with our answers, and then we kind of turn things around and let you guys out there, the listeners, give us your feedback. So this week, in honor of New Year's, of course, we're going to go with our New Year's resolutions for sports. You know, this could be for an athlete, for a coach, for a team, for a professional wrestler, for a promotion. Whatever it is that you have a resolution or something that you feel needs to be changed and amended in the new year, that's what it's all about. So without any further ado, I think it'd be only right, Marcus, if we allow Brother Alfred to get first crack at this because he is coming back to America.
Sure thing.
So okay. We can pass the torch around to you, Brother Alfred. What are your New Year's resolutions or resolution, if you only got one, for 2014?
I've got a big one, Brother Nick. And let me just say, I had a wonderful time in Liberia. Even when I was held up in the snowstorms and my flight was delayed and I had to spend the weekend in Washington, D.C., which was a pretty good weekend, I still had no complaints. But the one low light of my entire vacation was having to see the Green Bay Packers, my Green Bay Packers, get bounced out of the playoffs at home again. Let me just say, my New Year's resolution, and I don't like messing with people's money. I don't like calling for coaches' heads. They've got families to feed, and I understand that. But my New Year's resolution, somehow, some way, my Green Bay Packers need to go get Rex. Go get Rex Ryan as a defensive coordinator for the Green Bay Packers. He's obviously a lame duck coach in the New York Jets, where he overachieved and won 8 games on a team where he was only supposed to win 2. He was supposed to be the last place team. But John Isdick, the GM of the New York Jets, doesn't like Rex Ryan. It's no secret. And they're probably going to find some reason to fire him at the end of the year. When he's gone, the Green Bay Packers, who tend to melt down defensively with Dom Capers as their defensive coordinator, they did so against Arizona. They did so against Colin Kaepernick, who lit them up last year. They did so again against Colin Kaepernick. While they did hold him passing-wise, he ran all over them again. The Green Bay Packers' issues are not limited to just personnel. There are all kinds of Ted Thompson drafting injury-prone players. The quick fix is to get a guy like Rex Ryan, who's proven to overachieve with defenses, and take all those gaps of talent and hide them. And if Rex Ryan is a defensive coordinator for the Green Bay Packers, we're getting over that playoff hump. Otherwise, we're going to sit there and watch Colin Kaepernick and the San Francisco 49ers run all over us for the rest of Aaron Rodgers' Brett Favre-ian career. Go get Rex! That's my New Year's resolution.
Okay, that's pretty strong. Go get Rex. I mean, you're assuming, of course, Rex Ryan would be fired.
Okay, again, I don't want to mess with the money. I don't want to mess with the money. I'm just saying, if there is a situation that allows for Rex Ryan to become a Green Bay Packers, I would be in support of that situation.
He's had a one-year deal, so, I mean, he'll be...
Exactly. He's a lame duck.
He's a free agent after the end of the season, so...
Yeah, that's pretty strong. I mean, Rex is, for all of the bluster and the kind of antics that come with Rex, he is a great defensive mind, and he would be an asset to any team that could scoop him up. So that's a pretty solid one. Brother Marcus, what is your resolution for 2014?
Well, my resolution is for Mike Brown, the owner and president of the Cincinnati Bengals.
Oh, I think somebody about to throw some shade.
And you know what, Mike Brown? This resurgence this past 10 years has been nice. It's been cute. You guys have been 500. Some years you've won 10 games. This year won 11 games. It's been nice. Playoff time comes around. Ofers, man. Ofers. And you know why you're not winning playoff games? It's not Andy Dalton's fault.
Oh,
it's not Jay Gruden's fault. Clearly, the man got another job elsewhere. It's Marvin Lewis's fault. Marvin Lewis continues to hold down this franchise. And until you stop being cheap and decide to go out and spend some real money on an NFL coach, your team will continue to be great in the regular season and shit turds in the playoffs. Alfred, we had this discussion way back in September. I said, don't talk to me until Cincinnati wins a playoff game. Have they won a playoff game yet?
You know what? We're going to
talk to you about this. Don't talk to me. They haven't won a playoff game yet.
You're messing with the man's money. And you know what? I don't think he should be defined by his playoff wins and losses. They should just be happy that he was able to change that culture. But we'll get into this. We'll get into this. Marvin Lewis, if you want to fire Marvin Lewis, do so at your own peril. Have the Bengals get set back another 10 years. See how that works out for you.
So you're gonna settle for just making a play. That's good enough for you? That's how you live your life?
It should be good enough for the Bengals, but the fact that the Bengals now are expected to win playoff games after going to the playoffs for 3 years in a row for the first time in their franchise history, the fact that they're expected now and being held to a standard of winning playoff games – tie that to Marvin Lewis. So if you want to fire Marvin Lewis for not winning playoff games, just know that his tenure in Cincinnati was a success because he went to a place that growing up was a laughing stock, not of football, but of sports. The Cincinnati Bengals were a joke. And Marvin Lewis has changed that culture multiple times, mind you, because remember, there were days of the jailbird Bengals that Marvin Lewis was able to shake.
Marvin Schottenheimer is now 0-5.
Okay, that's cute. He has to lose one more game and go 6 in a row to be Marvin Schottenheimer.
Assuming Marvin Lewis keeps his job, because he probably will, and let's assume the Bengals make the playoffs next year, and let's assume the Bengals lose again in the first round of the playoffs, then is that enough for you to decide, okay, maybe this guy isn't the right fit for this team?
I never said that Marvin Lewis should stay coach of Cincinnati Bengals forever through thinking that whatever. I said that his legacy should lead him to be considered as one of the upper echelon coaches just based on all that he's done. I'm not going to hold him and define him by a playoff record because that would be ignoring what he did when he got there, what he did to change the way that team thinks about winning football games. There's obviously
winning in the regular season, you mean? Winning in the regular season.
10 years ago, the Cincinnati Bengals would have been doing backflips to be 8-8. I remember when they were 8-8 in 2003 when they beat the Kansas City Chiefs, who were 9-0 at the time. And you would have thought they won the Super Bowl. That was Marvin Lewis doing that. That was head coach, and that was somebody coming into a grease fire and completely turning around. We were talking about the don't F it up coach. The coach who just comes in there really doesn't have to be that great of a mind. Just has to kind of stay the course and get that team over the hump. That coach, I have no respect for. That's Mike Tomlin. Which, okay, I have a little respect for Mike Tomlin, but didn't you notice how the Steelers have gotten a little worse every year he gets away from Bill Cowher? They're going from winning Super Bowl games, then going to the Super Bowl and losing, then losing to Tim Tebow in the playoffs, now not even making the playoffs. What does that tell you about Mike Tomlin, Bill Cowher, and what the variable is there? Marvin Lewis did the opposite, and the Bengals have gotten better every year he gets there, with the exception of a couple.
So essentially, Marvin Lewis is Moses. He can lead you out of the wilderness, but he can't go into the promised land.
We can't make that distinction yet. His story, his Bible hasn't been written yet. And let me just say real quick, it's hard to win in the playoffs. Do you know who the most dominant playoff head coach in history is? Even if you don't, it should be obvious. They named the Super Bowl after him.
Lombardi,
exactly. Winning percentage-wise, no coach who's coached 10 games or more has a better winning percentage, not even close, 90%, 9-1 in the playoffs. You know what that means? You have to go a couple of generations, a couple of eras back to find a coach that dominant in the playoffs. You have to go before HGH, before steroids, before free agency and salary cap to go all the way back to find a coach that dominant. Otherwise, even the great Bill Belichick, since the last time he won the Super Bowl, has lost 7 times in the playoffs. We all think Tom Coughlin's great in the playoffs. He's missed the playoffs 4 of the last 5 seasons, and he's gone 1 and out 3 times, twice at home. Peyton Manning, we know, struggles in the playoffs. John Elway struggled till his twilight. Tom Brady goes 1 and out a couple of times in the past 5 years. So a lot of people struggle in the playoffs. You take away Aaron Rodgers' run, and he's won 1 playoff game against the Vikings at home. So everybody struggles in the playoffs. Let's not define a head coach by his playoff record, because everybody's got their problems.
2 things. All of those names you mentioned, they all have something in common. They've won a playoff game before. Number two, Lewis did make some history last weekend. He's now the first coach in the Super Bowl era to lose 5 straight playoff games with the same team. So there you go. Put that on the resume.
Why are we looking at the positive in that he's the first coach in Bengals history to go to the playoffs 3 straight years? You want to talk about the Bengals not making the playoffs since 1990? That's not Marvin Lewis's fault. The man came to the Bengals way after that, and they were such – nobody wanted to touch the Bengals. And the fact that he's able to win – again, I'm
okay,
not going to have time.
But we can applaud Marvin Lewis for what he did. But my point is, look, if you were to get rid of Marvin Lewis now, he's done enough – to build up this team that this wouldn't be a situation where Mike Brown would have a problem trying to fill that position in terms of coaching hire. He could find someone who is at least equal or if not better than Marvin Lewis, correct?
You know what's funny? People act like they have the answers. What would you do if you could get this team over the hump? I remember when the San Diego Chargers were statistically the best
team. You're not answering the question. You're not answering the question.
I'm answering the question. Let me answer the question. They had Marty Schottenheimer, remember? Okay, so that's a perfect analogy. Marty Schottenheimer with the Chargers. All those Pro Bowlers, 14-2. A great team in the regular season. Then they lost in the playoffs. And everybody said, you know what? They need to get rid of Marty Schottenheimer, and they need to get somebody to get them over the hump. As if it's so easy to take lightning in a bottle and just keep it going. Here comes North Turner. Guess what? They get worse every year he's there to where he gets his ass fired from San Diego. So if you want to fire Marvin Lewis, you go ahead. But let's not act like anybody who comes into Marvin Lewis's situation is going to be Jesus and able to lead the playoff Bengals over that hump. This is a team that now has a first place record and is going to have to play a tougher schedule next year. Do you really want somebody else to come in and completely change the continuity and the offense and the culture and all that that goes with the new coach? No, you don't. You want Marvin Lewis for now. Be very careful when you're trading those wires about firing a head coach very close to a playoff win.
Considering he already lost his offensive coordinator to Washington, what's the big difference if a new coach comes in and starts fresh? I mean, it has to start fresh in theory because he has to hire a new coordinator, correct?
Correct. But again, what was the big problem with the Cincinnati Bengals? I'm not blaming Jay Gruden, but the offense wasn't exactly gangbusters that game against the Chargers. I don't think they're
And the offense hasn't been that's been the thing with them in the last 3 years now. 1 touchdown, 6 picks for Andy Dalton.
How many quarterbacks outside of Andy Dalton and Joe Flacco are able to lead consistent playoff charges within the first 3 or 4 years? That's immediate success. I mean, that's in and of itself a success, and I would put this loss on Andy Dalton more than I would on Marvin Lewis, because while he is a subplot of the Bengals once again losing, Andy Dalton looked absolutely abysmal in that spot. He looked like he didn't even belong, and with all that talent, I think if you want to change something and try to maintain success, it would be the quarterback.
So you would get rid of Dalton this year?
Jay Cutler is just a phone call away.
He's not a phone call away. He's signed. He's locked up. That happened in Africa, man. He got signed.
Jay Cutler signed?
Oh, you missed that?
Cutler got broke off.
He got $50 million guaranteed.
Okay, that slipped through the cracks.
Yeah.
Well,
wonder what else he missed from Africa.
Yeah, that wasn't front page news over there.
No, I don't think they know what a Jay
Cutler. They signed Jay Cutler. Hooray for the Bears. But let me say, I see what Marcus is saying, and there is a valid point because there is a precedent set in terms of coaches that have changed the culture and have had success in the regular season but haven't been able to get over the hump and being let go. To me, the premier example of that is Tony Dungy with the Bucs. Tony Dungy completely changed that franchise around and basically built the foundation for a Super Bowl championship team, but was not able to, you know, go all the way with them. Fortunately, he was able to do that in Indy. But, you know, I understood why Tampa Bay fired him, even though at the time it was kind of like, it's a raw deal. Same situation with Andy Reid, the success that he had over those years in Philadelphia. Sometimes you need a change. You know, I'm not just advocating getting rid of Marvin just for change's sake, but sometimes if you hear the same song year after year after year, you know, what's that definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results. I think Marvin's a good coach. I think Marvin can have success with a lot of different teams in the league. But I don't know if his time in Cincinnati is up. And then Marcus just said, the other thing is the offense. You got to bring in a new coordinator. I'm not sure Andy Dalton is the guy. You know, I've kind of gone back and forth with the Red Rifle. You know, to me, he's in that category with Stafford and Ryan and cats like that. It's like, you give me that Jekyll and Hyde. You're hot and you're cold. You know, you can see flashes of talent, flashes of, you know, a franchise quarterback, quote unquote. But then they just make these dumb, idiotic mistakes. That playoff game that Dalton had was, that's some of the worst quarterbacking I've seen in the postseason.
Yeah, you know, that's just the thing. I wouldn't put Andy Dalton in the same category as Ryan and Matt Stafford because, yeah, when he's good, when he's good, he's pretty good. When Matt Ryan or Matt Stafford are good, they're otherworldly. When Andy Dalton's good, he's pretty good. When he's bad, he's Ryan Leaf. He's abysmal when he's bad. And let me just say this. This argument shouldn't even be confined to the Cincinnati Bengals. I'm talking about Marvin Lewis, the man, and my point has always been he is an elite head coach. You want to know how I know is that if he was to get fired, if he was to leave Cincinnati, he would get another job at the drop of a hat. He's black, so he might have to wait a year, but he would get another job at the drop of a hat, just like Andy Reid did when he got ran out of Philadelphia, and before he even got to his parking lot, got another job with the Kansas City Chiefs because the NFL knows talent, and they will hire talented head coaches like that. People, I can't tell you how many franchises are probably waiting for Marvin Lewis to get fired so that they can take him up someday.
I think, unfortunately, he would sort of be... Well, how long was Lovey out? 2 years?
One year? No. He was last...
Oh, yeah, that was... one season. Because Trestman's first one year season. This year.
Oh, yeah. It seems so long ago.
Yeah, no, I think he would definitely be a Lovey. He'd be in the Lovey category as opposed to Jim Caldwell, who's just turned into NFL team's Rooney Rules representative, who's just been going around interviewing because they have to interview a black person. So why not interview someone who they won't hire? So, yeah, I think you're right about that. But
was Caldwell last year the year when Peyton was injured?
He was fired when Peyton Manning got injured and they had that, like, 2-14 season.
Yeah,
I
always thought Caldwell got a raw deal on that one. Because we saw how bad that, you know, say a team without Peyton Manning could be, and you know, the difference that he makes. It's like, come on, man! Like he was the Lee Harvey Oswald on that one. He was the patsy.
Oh, I don't see him ever getting another head coaching job ever again.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that was some political stuff to that too, though, because you know, your boy made a clear point to kind of scrape away the vestiges of that Dungy Manning regime.
He
fired the GM, fired the coach. Ursay had a point he was trying to make with that too. That went past Caldwell.
Yeah, but at 2-14 is 2-14.
Like, yeah, and even when Caldwell was coaching in a Super Bowl, that was Peyton Manning does more for NFL offenses. And the thing is, Tony Dungy was that one of those few coaches who he had already established himself, so you couldn't give all the credit to Peyton Manning. But then when Dungy left and this kind of – I think Caldwell was in a bad situation, but let's face it, he was kind of a no-name coach. And so any credit for the Colts' success while Jim Caldwell was there went to Peyton Manning, and that might have ruined his career as far as being a head coach.
And what doesn't help is his college record before he got to the pros in terms of being a coach. He was awful.
It was a sweet setup because his homeboy hooked him up. Like anybody that's ever gotten a job off a recommendation from a friend,
it was black nepotism, which was good.
Yeah, it was great.
Because
it was like finally we get to have our nepotism as well. You know, Mike Martz getting all these jobs from all these connections. Finally, Jim Caldwell got the sweetheart job. Only thing that could mess it up is Peyton Manning getting hurt. And Peyton Manning never gets hurt, right, guys? Next thing you know, Jim Caldwell walking on the sideline with that Charlie Brown storm cloud over his head like, damn, I ain't never going to get another job again.
But, no, I agree with that black nepotism because I remember that season is where Mike Holmgren bequeathed the job to Jim Mora Jr. And a lot of teams were doing that to get around that Rooney rule so they wouldn't have to interview a black coach. They would just say, hey, okay, my next coach is going to be so-and-so. And they wouldn't have to go to the Rooney rule. So the fact that Tony Dungy did that was kind of him thumbing his nose at the establishment, saying, all right, fine, if you want to do that, then I'm going to do that, but on the other side of the coin.
I got to say, though, I'm glad Lovey got another shot, man, because I think Lovey was in a similar situation to Marvin, except Lovey actually won in the playoffs when he was dismissed from Chicago. So I like that hire by the Bucks, because anything after Schiano is an upgrade, and to be able to get a coach, I think the caliber of Lovie Smith, that's a good hire for Tampa Bay.
It definitely is, and you saw what happened to that Chicago Bears defense. It was one of the worst defenses in the league after Lovie Smith left, and you never see that for Chicago. And Chicago has always dealt with injuries, especially to like Brian Urlacher and Lance Briggs and Tim Jennings and all those Matt Brown, all kinds of star defensive players that they're still able to steer the ship because Lovie Smith is a great defensive coach. But when they didn't have that great defensive personnel, they completely fell apart once they started getting injured.
He's also another Tony Dungy guy. So Dungy, the Dungy tree, he's part of that.
Tony Dungy's turned out some pretty good coaches. So keep your head up, Jim Caldwell. So let's put a bow on the great Marvin Lewis debate. The question I'll pose to both of you, does Marvin Lewis get fired? And B, does he get another job? And does he deserve another job? More posing that to you, Brother Marcus.
No, he didn't get fired this offseason. But if they halfway struggle during the first part of next season, they'll can him. Yes, he deserves another job. What was the other question? That was it?
Yeah, that was it. Will he get another job? And especially, to you, does he deserve another shot?
Yeah, he deserves another shot. Yes, he'll get another job. And yes, he'll only get fired if they struggle halfway or during that season.
Well, okay, that's really all my point was. And that proves that he's a very good to elite head coach, is that he would get another job if he got fired. I can't even believe we're talking about this. No, he won't get fired. No, he wouldn't get fired even if they do struggle halfway through the season, because him and Mike Brown have been through so much that he at least owes it to Marvin Lewis to see him to the end. And it's not like they're the Cowboys, where it's this team with uber pressure to win a Super Bowl. Like, Marvin Lewis gave you some of the best years of your life. You better see him to the end. So, no, doesn't get fired. I don't even think it should qualify that he'll get another job, because I do think he'll have the Cincinnati Bengals right back in the playoffs, and I do think they're going to win a playoff game next year. But if somehow he gets fired, of course he'll get another job.
That should be the question. Would Dalton be the quarterback next season?
Yeah. What's he been there for? 3 years now?
Yep. And to his credit, he started as a rookie. This is his third year. On paper, he put up, if you're talking strictly fantasy, he was a top 10 fantasy quarterback, if not higher. So he's got, I guess, the talent. It's just the mental part that I worry about.
Yeah.
The only thing I didn't like about Dalton was he was kind of throwing his people under the bus after the game. He was like, we all had bad games. It wasn't just me. I'm like, no, if you're the leader of that team, you got to take all of that on yourself, especially when you played the game that we all saw you play. But I don't think Marvin will be fired either. I agree with Alfred. And if he were to be fired, I definitely think he's one of the top 10 to 15 coaches in the league. He's definitely in the upper echelon of the current crop of coaches, and he deserves another opportunity. Hell, Mike Shanahan is still living off of those two Super Bowls. Andy Reid, like you said, was hired instantly. and he doesn't have a ring, you know, Marvin Lewis deserves another shot as well. So I'm actually surprised. The guy that surprises me, you know, everybody says Cowher or John Gruden. I'm surprised Brian Billick never got back into the game.
I don't think he wants to. I think he would.
Yeah.
Because he's a very good analyst, and I think he's just comfortable doing that.
Yeah, it's easy money. You're always undefeated. So that'll be the end of the great Marvin Lewis debate, at least until the next season. And I guess it's time for my resolution.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. My resolution, and I'm glad we're doing this after Marcus had the big trip out to Vegas and got to talk to the people he needed to talk to and see the people he needed to see and was on the list that he needed to be on. So I can finally make this statement without fear of alienating Brother Marcus. I'm just going to say, Vince McMahon, my resolution for you, brother, is to have a black world champion in 2014. How come you ain't got no brothers on the wall, Vince? Ain't no brothers on the wall, Vince. I keep giving you money, but ain't no brothers on the wall.
Bro.
Are we talking resolutions or miracles?
maybe it's one of them Otis Nixon pipe dreams, but like Biggie Langston, I was at the WWE Live house show last weekend here in Hampton. And just to let you know, Cena won on the show. So, you know, I'll let you guys kind of guess. Who do you think were the three biggest cheers? Got the three loudest pops.
CM Punk? Was CM Punk on the show?
CM Punk was probably the loudest.
Daniel Wyatt. Yeah. Was he Wyatt then?
He was a Wyatt and still got the second biggest pop on the show.
Oh, wow.
So there's one other guy.
Biggie Langston.
Biggie Langston got the third loudest pop of the night. And wow. here's the even crazier part. The fourth guy was R-Truth.
The R-Truth is Virginia. Is he Virginia or Carolina?
This is Carolina.
Okay, yeah, so that's not too far, is it?
But yeah, Biggie Langston he's over. You know, it's too soon to put the title on him now, but I'm just saying this. In 11 months and 2 weeks, put the belt on the brother. Let me just get one brother on the wall, Vince. One brother not named Dwayne Johnson.
And that's questionable at best. I mean, Dwayne Johnson, yeah, I love The Rock, but he's more Samoan than he is black. You look at his tattoos, he identifies with
Samoan. Yeah, he identifies as Samoan for the most part, yeah. So, yeah, can we get one brother, Vince? One brother. That's all I want to see before I die.
One brother in TNA? How about that? How about TNA just hires one black wrestler?
Good point.
Hey,
they had Kevin Kenny King for a little bit there.
They hired black wrestlers, they just don't put them on TV.
So at least Vince is putting dollars in the chat. They put out there dancing and shutting and driving. They just getting money. Ditsy Tartar.
The black world champion, though.
Who?
TNA did. R-Truth. R-Truth was a
black R-Truth world champion.
R-Truth
is a champion?
He was. NWA champion, right? When he was Ron Killings.
Yep. Not only was he the world champion, but he was also a tag team champion with Pac-Man Jones.
That he was.
Oh, man.
And he had the same song. He had that What's Up song in TNA, too.
Yeah, he just remixed it for the WWE.
That's crazy.
Yeah, you don't remember that, Marcus?
I wasn't watching TNA then.
No, I think that's what got me to watch TNA, to be honest.
When Ron Killings won the title? Yeah, because that was the thing I was talking to somebody the other night. It's so crazy. The two organizations that have had black champions are both in the South with WCW and TNA. Yeah. And it's like, come on, Vince. You know that would look good on Linda's campaign.
That would look phenomenal to get that black vote.
Yes, get the black vote out. Just have Biggie Langston as your world champion and being out there on the stump for Linda. That's the way to get the black vote out, Vince.
By the way, before we dive into the Vegas story, I was leaving the WWE announcement, going back up to the top of the arena, and going the opposite direction was Linda McMahon. And a bunch of us just looked like, that's Linda McMahon, where is she going? And she was just walking through the crowd the opposite direction.
Just walking through the crowd? She had security?
No, and I think she was actually sitting, she was sitting in the crowd for the announcement. She wasn't in the back, and when the announcement was over, she was walking towards the stage to get to the back, and I was like, wait, what? Oh, that's... Where are you going? Yeah, it was very odd. We all did a double take. Like, awesome. Wait a second, that's Linda McMahon. Okay.
There goes Linda. That's her.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe, I don't know. Maybe she was, maybe she's setting those plans in motion. Maybe they're already working on their first black WWE unified world heavyweight champion.
No, I just want a champion outside of John Cena or Randy Orton. I mean, I'll settle for it.
In all honesty, in our lifetime, do you think, in our lifetime, which you don't know how much time we got left, especially as black men.
Yes.
Do you think you'll see a black WWE champion? A black WWE, not half black, no contingencies. A black WWE
champion. No contingencies. I'm a pure Negro heavyweight champion.
I want purebred. I want the thoroughbred.
I want the darkest of dark.
No, I think Big E does win it one day.
Yeah, I'd say Big E is probably the best option that they've had in a while.
Yeah, as critical as I am about this issue, I'm with you guys. I think Big E is a guy, and especially if you throw in the fact that he's got a very tight relationship with John Cena. They say backstage, John Cena is like Big E's best friend, and John Cena loves that he lifts. He's a power lifter, and he's got all these world records, and you know, look at what Sheamus lifting weights with Triple H did for his career. So I think it's going to be a similar situation.
Yeah, I think if anybody's going to do it, it's going to be Big E. I don't see anybody on the horizon or anybody that we've already seen that's going to do that. And actually, I think I would say there's probably a better chance Roman Reigns holding the title than Big E Langston.
But Roman Reigns isn't even close to black, is he?
Samoan.
No,
he's a rock. He's a rock 2.0.
He's full Samoan, isn't he?
Yeah. I'll say Roman Reigns will probably hold the title before Big E, but I think eventually Big E will get there.
But wait a second. If we're going to count Obama as the first black president, why are we not counting The Rock as the first black champion? Because they're both half.
I'm not counting him.
I'm just saying. I mean, Rocky Johnson was full black, wasn't he?
Technically, Rocky Johnson was.
And no, I'm talking about the whole Obama tie-in, like in terms of what the culture has decided to. And I'm sure if you ask Obama, he'll probably consider himself, you know, black, not mixed or mulatto or anything like that. But I always forget that Rocky's father was full black because I see so much of the Samoan character within him.
And that's the thing is, you look at Obama, nobody's going to forget Obama has black heritage, especially because of the stage he's on, he's running for president.
Especially not the Republicans.
Yeah. You look Rush Limbaugh's never going to forget that he's black. It's what keeps him up at night.
Hey, we love you too, Republicans. Thank you for downloading the show.
Thank you very much. But The Rock was never really marketed as a black. He was with the Nation of Domination. But I don't think that was a black power thing. I think, you know, when The Rock joined the Nation, it was more screw the fans, I'm turning heel. And he's always been marketed as a Samoan. You look at his curly hair, you look at his tattoos and his Samoan culture. He could do the Samoan dances. And if you look at any documentary with The Rock, he spends a lot of time talking about how much respect he has for his mother, and he loves his mother. And if you read The Rock's book, he doesn't have really a strong relationship with his father. So he's always identified with that Samoan culture. And that's how I see him. I don't see him as the first black WWE champion. There's no civil rights movement with The Rock winning a WWE title.
Plus, The Rock transcended, you know, he transcended race. He transcended, you know, the way that he was booked at times. You know, The Rock was like one of those once-in-a-lifetime type of stars. And my thing is, when are we going to get like a Black Miz? Like, The Miz was a WWE champion. I want a black dude that's as terrible as The Miz to be able to have that opportunity.
That's when you look at race relations. You see
that's when things will be equal, and race will no longer be a part of the issue when you can have mediocre black WWE champions.
Yeah.
When is Xavier Woods going to get the belt?
Never. Not even close. You look at a guy like Shelton Benjamin, how talented he was. You know, don't tell me about how he couldn't talk. He could cut a decent promo, and all he needed was somebody to guide him along, and people would have accepted him as a WWE champion because he was a legitimate athlete. But as good as Shelton was, I mean, he really didn't sniff a WWE title.
Mm-mm.
No. I mean, you can go down the list. MVP, Booker T, Mark Henry. Mark Henry should have definitely at least had a transitional run after the fake retirement, which they really did nothing with.
I agree, man. They could have gone miles with that. Let me tell you, when you hear John Cena versus Mark Henry on paper, it's not a match anybody wants to see. But they were in Philadelphia, which is a hardcore wrestling territory for the Money in the Bank. And when Mark Henry came out, those fans were so behind him, and they wanted to see that match just to see Mark Henry fulfill his destiny after his fake retirement. And it didn't happen. I mean, and that tells you how bad the fans wanted it, and it's really inexplicable that it didn't happen.
So let's see. We've had a Puerto Rican champion. We've had, even though it's not recognized, you've had an Asian champion in Inoki.
Mexican? Oh, you've had a Carlos. Well, not Carlos.
No.
Come on.
Morales was Puerto Rican.
Early. Pedro Morales.
No, he was Puerto
Morales
Rican.
Puerto Rican?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Alberto Del Rio was the WWE champion.
Yeah. So that covers. Was he?
Yeah.
Mexico. Yes. He won Money in the Bank.
Was Eddie WWE or was Eddie World?
Eddie was WWE Undisputed. So
yeah, and so was Ray. Ray
so was Ray.
Three Latinos.
You have no. Great Khali was never WWE champion.
No, thank God.
Oh man, yeah. So yeah, it's four Latinos, one half black, half Samoan dude, and the rest is white.
Like, and Yokozuna was Samoan.
Yes.
So
Samoa's got one and a half representatives.
And then yeah, that's it. That's and Sheik.
Sheik was Sheik.
He was still champ.
Sheik was Sheik.
And San Martino is Italian. So yeah, I mean it's pure group Italian is white, sure, but you know. Yeah, they definitely need to branch out when it comes to the championship belt, and not so much even race, but just in general, like just get some new fresh faces and they're not the same.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. The same group of guys from 10 years ago are still on top, and that includes Bautista's coming back. But we should save that for the Ringside Wrap.
Yeah, we should have.
Which will be coming
really
up?
Just have the Ringside Wrap. Just
now. I feel like we should just keep going like an extra 10 minutes.
Let's just segue into that, and then we'll just. We'll just throw in a 7-4.
Yeah, that's
what we're seeing on the fly.
It's on the fly booking.
I like it.
So, yeah, you talk about Batista, you talk about, you know, the WWE Network. A lot of big news going on in the world of professional wrestling. Marcus Vandenberg, you had a chance to go out to the CES out there in Vegas where you stayed away from the Jabbar, which was a smart move. what were your initial thoughts of the event, and how was your trip?
Overall trip was good. Initial thoughts, we sort of knew what was going to happen going in, so it wasn't too much of a surprise. I was sitting next to people who you could tell weren't wrestling fans because every little video or sound was a ooh and ah, so. That was interesting to watch, but we all pretty much knew it was going to be the network announcement. It was going to be a streaming online network. It was going to have access to the archives, and I guess the big question mark we have was WrestleMania, and they answered that question in terms of providing that for the users. But in terms of the presentation itself, it pretty much explained most of the answers I had going in terms of how the interface would work. In terms of how fans could access the network through computer, Chromecast, Apple TV, etc. We sort of knew about the date and price already, so that wasn't a total surprise. But I think, the big thing I wanted to know was who was actually supporting the network in terms of the back end. And once the guy from Major League Baseball, Vance Mina, came out, I was like, all right, well, that answers that question in terms of can they actually support this, because they're the best in the business in terms of trying to put on live events and have archive footage. So on paper, they've done everything right in terms of price point, in terms of partnering with the right servers, in terms of providing all 12 pay-per-views. After the initial announcement they made, they had interviews with the talent, which we'll feature at the end of this podcast. Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, and John Cena. Cena said that this will be a game changer in terms of the way digital sports is, or sports in the digital world is presented and aired. Austin feels that this is McMahon's number one idea, even over WrestleMania, in terms of what he's come up with. And HBK sort of just rambled on about WrestleMania. The other interesting takeaway was...
Well, you don't ask HB Shizzle about this new technology, brother. I'm just out here on the farm.
They did give away Chromecast. I know Court Bauer will probably enjoy reading about that. So, I mean, that was interesting that they're really trying to push that you can view this thing on multiple outlets and not just on your laptop, which I mean, Chromecast are, I think, what, $30 now, $40? So it's cheap enough that you can, if you're really a true wrestling fan and you really want to enjoy the pay-per-views, then you can spend the money to get the Chromecast and view it on your TV as opposed to trying to watch on your 13-inch. But overall, it was a good night. I got to meet the Bella Twins, and I took a picture of them because my girlfriend is a huge fan of them, and I sent that along. But also there were Big Show was there, Great Khali was there, Mark Henry was there, and he was selling his arm injury from Raw, which I thought was funny because he was in a sling. And Cameron and Naomi were there as well. And no signs of Hogan, so that's about it.
What about the man from parts unknown? Was he in the building?
Undertaker?
That Warrior.
Warrior? Please.
He's waiting. He's training for the Royal Rumble is what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, if Jake can come back, I can come back.
Okay, if let me just say this. And I've been saying... This is partly for my ego, because I've been saying for a while now that the Ultimate Warrior will be a surprise entrant. If he's not a surprise entrant in the Royal Rumble, given the depth issues with WWE, shame on WWE. Because you know, with the deal they signed, they should be able to at least maneuver and say, hey, you want a 2-3 minute spot in the Royal Rumble? And, you know, they can even have Jake the Snake there, too, to where they have a showdown, much like they did with Jimmy Snuka and Roddy Piper in New York in 2008. You could do something like that, but the Warrior better be in the Royal Rumble, or I will feel like I had wasted my money.
You're gonna waste your money.
Well, not if you get the WWE Network, brother Alfred.
Oh, you know what? I'm planning. It's not gonna be available then. It's not available to what? February 24th.
February 24th. Oh, and here's my theory that I was thinking about on my long drive back last night. So, I think we've mentioned Hogan before, and I think the perfect time to present Hulk Hogan will be on that February 24th issue of Raw. And have him come out in whatever angle they're cooking up in the final segment, and then have them cut off and say, hey, you know, check out the post show, and, you know, sort of get people to, okay, well, Hogan just came back and now they're going off the air, but I know if I have the network, I can go watch the post show, and then maybe they'll continue on with whatever they're doing. But I think in terms of the build for WrestleMania, it's after Elimination Chamber. It's sort of the first night of building towards that show. You're launching the network. I think that would make the most sense in terms of bringing him in. Otherwise, it's like, okay, well, if he doesn't come back that night, then when do you work him in terms of before Mania?
Yeah, that's a really good idea. I was talking with Wei Ting earlier in the week from Live Water Wrestling, a good friend up there in Canada, and he was saying, you know, that what one thing you might start seeing is, like you were saying, Marcus, the WWE starting to book towards the network, especially with, you know, the TV deals kind of coming around, the negotiations and some of the things that we've seen and heard on the internet about potential moves on that side. But, in, you know, because you have to sign up for a six-month block of the network, a six-month commitment. So he's like, you know, at the beginning and then at WrestleMania and then at the right when, like around that five-month mark, they're going to start gearing up storylines to hook people to sign up for another 6 months. Do you see something like that happening where the actual booking is being influenced by the network?
No, I don't think so, because it's hard to tell. I mean, yes, you don't have an initial launch at the initial sign-up date, but then it's hard to say who's signing up when. And in terms of if you want to book your storylines based on when the most number of subscriptions might run out, then I think that's taking a big risk, and it just seems like it's just too much work for those writers to figure out, okay, well, their first batch of subscriptions are running out on August 24th, so let's put this show to entice. I think initially they'll do it to entice people the first night, and after that, it'll just be business as usual in terms of that pre and post show. It'll probably be pretty, you know, not breaking any news, not breaking any storyline, just sort of, you know, the usual stuff they put on.
And if WWE had that tendency, I think they would have done it already with their WWE app. I always thought when I heard the WWE app come along and that they were going to have WWE running during commercials, that they would at least book one match to where the finish came during commercials. So you had to have the WWE app in order to see the finish. I thought they were going to do that with the Money in the Bank match, to be honest. But since they haven't really done that, and WWE app is usually just a bunch of throwaway content that you really don't need to see, I don't think they're going to do that with the WWE network.
Yeah, I mean, and then at least with the network, there's something valuable there. Unlike with the app that just eats up space on your phone. Like, I tried to download it. I got my new fancy cell phone, and I tried to download the app, and I deleted it, like, that same night. I'm like, no, Jerry Lawler, you lied to me, King.
I feel better knowing that they're partnering with the right people that I don't really expect a whole lot of kinks. I mean, unless they get like a, which they probably will, they'll get an influx of signups that first night. So, yeah, I'm curious to see how it plays out in terms of what technical issues. I've used Fight Pass now a few times, and I've had some issues in terms of trying to get some of the archive videos to load. So
that's the other thing. Do you think this is going to force the UFC to step their game up?
Oh, I think it has to. I mean, the comparisons on paper, it just doesn't compare to what WWE is offering compared to UFC. For the same price, you're getting pay-per-views compared to no pay-per-views. You're getting their responses, putting on these international shows that feature C-level talent compared to what you would get anyways in WWE. So I think it's going to force them to maybe take some of their lesser pay-per-view cards and toss them on Fight Pass, because, you know, people know, really, that UFC knows when they're booking cards that some shows are bigger draws than others, and if they can identify those cards and put those out there for free as part of Fight Pass, then I think that will help balance the battle between the two. Speaking of UFC, actually, we'll go out on this. I had a chance to, while I was at CES, I attended a UFC event. That was Anthony Pettis, UFC lightweight champion, who is injured. He is now one of the faces of Monster Headphones. And he had an event at the UFC gym where they film the Ultimate Fighter, which was a first for me.
Was he there with Tebow?
No, it was a separate event. Separate headphone event.
Damn, headphones. You got all the headphone connections, Marcus.
I know. But Anthony Pettis was there, Dana White was there, Shane Victorino was there, which is kind of odd. No one really talked to him, but I knew who he was. I'm a baseball fan, but he's a big MMA fan. Neo was there.
Neo was there.
Yeah. Tyson Bedford was there.
Most random grouping of people.
And two UFC Hall of Famers, Stephen Bonner and Forrest Griffin, were there because they gave like a demonstration in the octagon in terms of, you know, what mixed martial arts was. But I had a chance to speak to Anthony Pettis about his injury and about Dominic Cruz and Anderson Silva. So we'll go out with that interview and we'll come back into segment four.
While we do that, I'm gonna go see if I can find some better headphones. Now you got me thinking, Marcus.
So I didn't go up with Monster.
Crazy opportunity for the UFC. Obviously, the UFC could choose any fighter they wanted to represent this brand, and it tells me. You know, it was before I won my title fight, too, which was awesome. You know, it's not because I was the champion. They saw something in me that they decided that I have to be the face of this company.
How important is music for you before a fight? And what do you usually listen to when you're heading out to the octagon?
Yeah, I mean, even before the fight or before any of that, man, like music, I grew up in a rough neighborhood. Music was my getaway from all that. You know, I grew up poor, broke. My mom had three sons all by herself. So music's the only consistent thing that followed with me through. So
You know, I listen to hip hop. I'm a hip hop guy. Also, I'm Spanish. I listen to reggaeton, all the Spanish artists. So, anything that gets me hyped, really, man. I'm open to all music. But my main song is my walkout song. It's called "It's Showtime" by Jim Jones and Tum Tum. That's my shit. It goes on, bro. I get in the zone. Right? No matter where I'm at, I drive in a car, hear that song. That's the song.
In terms of albums, what do you listen to currently? Anything that stand out?
The new Beyonce? Nah, I'm just saying. Nah, it's a good album though, man. Drug of Love, I'll be bumping that with my windows up. For sure Drake, man. I feel like Drake's lyrics, you know, the way he talks about, you know, coming from the bottom. All, I even if he did it, his lyrics I really relate to. Meek Mill, killing stuff right now, love his music. Chris Brown, Jay-Z, old school Tupac all the time, Biggie, all of that.
Now you're currently recovering from injury, correct?
Yes.
How's that going?
So good. I'm a month out of surgery. I'm walking already. No pain. I mean, I feel like surgery went well. I didn't have any pain at all. I was off pain pills. I didn't even take pain pills for all the surgery. So good surgery. Now it's just a waiting process. I've been here before. You got to wait for the heal. You got to build it back up. The hardest thing to build back up is the confidence. Going in there knowing nothing's wrong, and that's what I'm doing now.
Two injury questions. First, Dominic Cruz. What were your thoughts yesterday when you heard the news about him getting injured and stripped of the title?
Sucks, man. I feel for him. Dominic Cruz is one of my boys. We were champ in the UFC, WC together. Uh-huh. So we have some history. But injuries are part of the game, man. You know, and for somebody to be out that long, I understand. Like, if I'm out for a year, give somebody else a chance. I mean, I was waiting for a title for a long time.
Yeah.
So I understand that. You know, and if he got injured again, he has to figure out how he can get around these injuries, train differently, or do something differently so he's not getting injured anymore.
And Anderson Silva a couple weeks ago. Where were you when that happened? Were you at
I was at my sports bar. I own a sports bar in Milwaukee.
Okay.
So whenever I'm in town in for the fights, I host the fights in my own bar. Watching it with all my fans, my family and friends, and saw the injury happen. Couldn't even watch it. It was disgusting. Sucks because he's one of the greatest of all time. He'll be the greatest of all time. He's the Muhammad Ali of MMA. And the way he went out, sucks.
Do you think he'll come back for one last fight?
I hope he doesn't, because why? His legacy is already fulfilled. Was he going to go back, win the belt? I mean, he's done what he was going to do in the sport. I don't want to see him make his brand worse. I mean, I feel like he's where he should be at. Lost to one guy, not numerous guys.
One last thing. Milwaukee. You mentioned Milwaukee. Wow. It's been cold as hell this week. How do you put up with the weather?
Honestly, like, I've been injured, so I've been taking care of a lot of business opportunities I had. I haven't been in Milwaukee much. I go back to see my daughter. I go back to see my family. But other than that, man, I'm trying to stay on the road as much as possible, not only for the weather, but I'm in a business. We have a small window to make money. Taking advantage of that, making things happen, and I'll be good.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at facebook.com/thekingsofsport.
And we are back on the Kings of Sport, ready to close up shop on the first show of the year. But before we do, we got to end it the way we do each and every week, and that's with segment 4. Let's talk about somebody who is already the biggest loser of 2014, and that was Dennis Rodman. And personally, guys, I think Dennis Rodman just really felt left out last year. You know, we had so many ratchet stories featuring the likes of Kanye West and Hollywood Simpson and Tiger Woods, and nobody was really talking about Dennis Rodman. And I think the worm was like, you know what? I need to do something about that. And he organized a quote-unquote a sport diplomacy tour to promote peace and goodwill and brotherhood. But apparently it turned out to be an okey-doke, because he had some former players on the tour, notably Charles Smith, Cliff Robinson, Sleepy Floyd, among others. And they all, to a man, have said, you know, this is not what we signed up for. Dennis Rodman got into some trouble by singing a happy birthday to Kim Jong-un, the supreme leader of North Korea. And in my mind, in the version of this event, in my mind, he's like dressed up like Marilyn Monroe, and he's like, "Happy birthday, Mr. President." Yeah, try sleeping after that image, folks. But it's just a weird, wacky thing. And then, you know, there was some allusions to the American that was captive over there. And Dennis kind of going off on a CNN interview. And that brought David Stern into the fold, which, you know, is another layer of craziness in his story. So, you know, anytime you got Dennis Rodman, it's going to be crazy. You throw in North Korea, which is, you know, an already volatile and mysterious topic to a lot of people. And then you put David Stern on top of that. And you know David Stern was sitting at home like, all I want to do is make it through this year, and I'll go to Tahiti and keep my feet up on the beach, and now I got to go deal with this.
Make it through this month. He's done February 1st.
Make it through the month. So, you know, Alfred, you've seen some of the things, and you know, this is just kind of been something that started off with little fanfare, and now it seems to be, you know, front page news, and what will Dennis say next, and the family of, I believe, Kenneth May, is the name of the gentleman that was in prison. They're upset with Dennis Rodman, and it's crazy. Like, this is how you start off a year in terms of ratchetness.
Yeah, and the first time even caused a lot of controversy, but this is Dennis Rodman's fourth time going to North Korea in the past calendar year, so the fact that it's becoming a trend and now really becoming an international incident is what's really causing controversy, especially because it's somebody in Dennis Rodman who a lot of people perceive doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know the magnitude of why it's not a lot of people perceive it as not okay for him to be in North Korea. If he had an actual stance and something of substance to why he's there and why he supports the people, it'll be a different story, but he can't explain himself. I mean, even Jay-Z had a good defense mechanism for going to Cuba, put out a rap song pretty much telling everybody to go screw themselves, and had some clever lines in there, but Dennis Rodman is pretty much, it's like he's being tricked into going to North Korea, like they're hiding everything bad, and behind the scenes he asks, you know, Kim Jong-un, nothing bad is going on here in North Korea, is there? And he says, no, Dennis, no, don't listen to them. Who's your friend, Dennis? I'm your friend. So, you know, it's like he's being taken advantage of, and I think it's kind of sad, all in all.
I'm still tripping over this. I'm looking at the roster. You mentioned some of the names. I sense a theme here. They're all pretty much knuckleheads. Kenny Anderson had his issues. Vin Baker, a drunk and alcoholic at one point.
Vin Baker!
Craig Hodges, who was not a troublemaker, but he had issues with the national anthem, and he sort of got blackballed. Doug Christie, married a psycho. And Charles Smith.
Doug Christie's like, hold on, I can hang out with Kim Jong-un instead of Jackie for 2 weeks?
Yeah.
When do I sign up, Dennis?
And Charles Smith, one day we'll get G-Wash back on the show. We have a great Charles Smith story from All-Star Weekend a few years ago, where we were rejected at an NBA party by Charles Smith, who was working the door, so this is quite the collection of basketball players, and this whole Rodman thing. Alfred's right. It is kind of sad that he's being sort of taken advantage of and manipulated. And I don't think he understands what he's doing, like how much this says about, you know, the U.S. I mean, a relationship with North Korea has not been good, to say the least. They're probably number one on our list of countries of do not associate with. So the fact that he's been there four times now, and he's probably the most high profile person to meet Kim Jong-un from the U.S. is just scary, to say the least.
And the thing is, you talked about, you know, Dennis kind of being misled, and you know, that was a sentiment that the Bay family, Kenneth Bay, the man that is imprisoned over North Korea, that's what they were alluding to. And also David Stern, who said that these guys were kind of blinded by, you know, the money that was put out there. I believe it was at Paddy's, was the company that provided the funds. They were a sponsor of the tour. And then once they realized, hey, this might not be really great for our brand, they decided, you know, to be kind of an underwriter down, you know, on the down low. But they still give Dennis and these guys their money. And I think Sleepy Floyd said it was, you know, under $10,000, but still, you know, for a week and a half, 2 weeks, however long the trip was, that's a pretty nice little chunk of change.
Yeah.
And the guy that surprises me is probably Craig Hodges. Like you said, he's not a knucklehead. He's a guy who has had very staunch political beliefs. That's part of the reason why, you know, I believe he never got another shot in the league. And it seems to me, out of all the guys, he would be the one that would be the most informed. And maybe he had good intentions for going on this tour, but I don't think any of them knew. You know, Sleepy Florida said that they were supposed to do some stuff with some schools and with kids. And once they got on the plane, the entire itinerary was different than what they had been sold.
Well, anyone who wears a dashiki to the White House and, you know, lets his thoughts known to George Bush, maybe he's not really aligned with this country so much. So trip to North Korea, so what? It's not like the U.S. cares about him and his rights. So I didn't surprise me.
North Carolina. North Korea needs 3-point shooters, too.
Yeah.
I think you brought up probably the most, if we thought this story couldn't get any weirder, somebody had to stand up for America. And who better than Iron Mike Tyson, who has called what Dennis Rodman has done treason. It's treasonous.
Can you imagine
does
the
Mike
promos
Tyson even know what treason
two?
Is? Does he even know what this word
it's,
means?
It's less than poison. Boom.
I love that Mike Tyson comes out of. I mean, that would be the most between those two. That's enough crazy to sell some pay per views. I think between Dennis Rodman and Mike Tyson.
Well, here it is. I guess he had some comments. He was talking to a CBS affiliate in Philadelphia, and you know he's saying Rodman lost it, which is your first. Like, if Mike Tyson is saying you lost it. You lost it. Charles Smith is a decent person. I could not believe that Charles Smith would be involved with that, contrary to what Marcus Vandenberg says.
Yeah, well, that's great watching about Charles Smith.
It's such a disappointing factor. It's not good. Nobody can stop me from making a fool of myself, but this is some really, really bad stuff. So that's what Mike Tyson had to say about Dennis Rodman. So you're like, you know, when Mike Tyson is the one offering the sage, toned down, reasonable wisdom that you may be a little bit out there.
And you're right. We joke about that, but Mike Tyson is a voice of reason in all this. And not necessarily for his stance, but just he makes sense. And Dennis Rodman straight up does not make sense. He hasn't made sense a second he's been on television defending himself for going to North Korea.
And he's probably been drunk most of the time.
He admitted to drunk
before this. Yeah, he admitted it. He apologized for it.
Yeah. David Stern is like, man, I'm getting too over this shit. I really am.
So, BET, we've mentioned this story right after it happened during the BET Awards in June about B-Stot, who was hired, a transgender host who was hired to work the pre-show. And there's an issue with the way that B-Stot was dressed, and he eventually got pulled from the broadcast. He ended up filing a lawsuit against BET, and now we have some details that came out this week from some emails that were leaked out from BET about what happened that day during the BET Awards. And of course, TMZ somehow got a hold of them. If I would have known TMZ was taking emails from BET, I would have sent them emails years ago from BET. From TMZ.com, BET Music Programming President Stephen Hill wrote a pointed email before the show that says, "I don't want looking like a woman B-Stot. I want tempered B-Stot." Network VP Rhonda Cowan offered help, saying, "I can speak to him about being less womanly." Stephen Hill... I don't want to go that route, but let's just say Stephen Hill probably shouldn't be telling people how to express themselves in terms of gender. And Rhonda Cowan is someone I actually worked with, and I do like outside of the office. We slashed heads at work, but she's someone I worked with directly when I was at BET. TMZ goes on. There is an email from BET producer Stephanie Hodges after the broadcast that said he got upset in reference to B-Stot and said he was going to blow this shit up and called Lad. And then the last email was from Monique Ware, someone I also worked with at BET directly. And she wrote, the spin should be he was late for a live show and subsequently replaced. And it would have been awkward in a live show to have the person assuming his role removed. And if you haven't seen what B-Style looks like, you need to Google so you get a sense of, you know, when we say he's a man, yes, he's a man in terms of the body parts, but he's dressed like a woman. Now, you know, this isn't the whole story. I've heard stuff that implies that there's other stuff that B-Stott did that will help BET's case, but just the fact that this whole lawsuit is going on is not a good look for the network, and this isn't the first lawsuit that's been filed at BET since I was there, or since I left. But this is the biggest one in terms of getting out and getting national exposure, and it's not a good look.
No, it's not. And like we said back when we had the discussion after the BET Awards, it's like, you know, they have nobody to blame but themselves on this issue. It's like you can't hire somebody who you know does a certain thing,
yeah,
and then, you know, get offended or taken aback when, you know, they do what you hired them to do.
You know, it's not like they hired Bow Wow to do the red carpet show, and Bow Wow came dressed as a woman, and they were taking it back. No, you knew what you're getting from the jump when you hired B-Stott. So, why they wanted to change the way he presented himself, I don't get it. And you know, it says, you know, there's a line at TMZ that says BET has said it embraces global diversity and regrets unintentionally offending anyone in the LGBT community. But these emails are. And hopefully there's not any more, because it's leading towards the direction that they aren't embracing diversity, and they don't believe in what the LGBT community believes in.
And they couldn't have handled this any worse. I think it would have been better of them to have just altogether pulled B. Scott away from the coverage or even fired them right on the spot. And even that would have been poorly received by the LGBT community. But for them to try to tinker with B. Scott, and you see the pictures on TMZ.com where B. Scott's looking feminine in one picture, and the next shot you see B. Scott wearing like a blazer to look a little more masculine, and it's just very dirty. It just sounds very dirty how they handled the situation.
And the thing with me is, you know, you've got to be smarter than that, and just speaking from a business perspective, even if you believe in the pit of your soul that what B. Smith does is wrong and that shouldn't be a part of what we do. Once your company has asked this man to come and be a part of the broadcast, you know what to do. You know, just as your job, you know the backlash and the outrage that could occur if you let your own biases or your own prejudices interfere with that broadcast. And, you know, it's going to sound cynical, but you never should pick a fight if you're a national organization. You should never pick a fight with an organization or a group of people that knows how to mobilize. That means don't mess with black folks, don't mess with Jewish people, and don't mess with gay people.
Yeah, and you know, I'm usually these BET lawsuits, people will file them and they'll settle and not really fight back because usually they know they're in the wrong. That's just my opinion. But this one, I think there is going to be, you know, a response, and I think they might have enough to combat what B-Stott is putting out there. So I'm curious to see what the eventual decision is on this lawsuit.
Okay, well, I was just going to say this is just how people would expect BET in general to handle the situation, and that it's not going to become a national issue because BET is such a niche product.
Yeah, I agree. And just, you know, personally, it's weird seeing like the woman who pretty much got me canned in a lawsuit on TMZ. I was like, oh, that's funny. That's some karma for you.
will you be called to the stand to testify, Marcus? Well, you see Marcus out there. I ain't one to gossip, but this is what went down.
It wasn't me leaking those emails.
So you don't have any dirt on this one?
Hmm?
You don't have any emails or dirt or anything that you...
On the people in
you don't have any emails or dirt or anything that you might have saved?
Oh,
yeah. You said the woman got your can.
Oh, not related to this. Actually, no, I don't have access to my, you know, my BET emails anymore. I didn't think to forward them out, so, you know, anything that might have come up is all gone now, so.
We'll say Marcus could have been the
it's in the past.
Mystery informant.
No, it wasn't me.
Deep Throat Vandenberg.
Not touching that one at all.
that's how we're starting the year off. So yeah, it's gonna be that kind of 2014, folks.
By the way, Gary Washburn said he's down to come on to tell the Charles Smith story. So just let him know when. So maybe before All Star Weekend.
Yeah, that'll be a good tie-in. That'll be a good tie-in. So yeah, we can because Mike Tyson said Charles Smith was a decent person, Marcus Vandenberg.
He's a scumbag. All right, it's Chinese food time, guys. Let's bring the show home.
Let's hope not.
Oh, wow. That's a hell of a delay.
I know.
That was like at least 15, 20 seconds.
It was.
Yeah,
Alfred.
Yeah. let's wrap this one up. Great to have a whole team reassembled, and you know, we got a lot of.
What is going on? Are we?
Oh boy! Welcome back.
Alfred, we're wrapped
what
up.
What is going on?
Are you still in Liberia?
I told you to switch from a tumble wireless when you got back to America. He'll respond in 20 seconds.
Yeah, continue on, Nate.
So,
okay, we're almost there.
Stop talking. We're almost there. Stop talking.
You guys are.
I wish this was a bit, folks, but no.
I hung up on Alfred. Continue on, Nate.
This is really happening. Yeah, so, Alfred will be back next week with a better connection. And, you know, we've got some great guests in store for you and some great topics to come. And we've got in this very show, don't go anywhere because after we wrap up, we're going to play the press conference that Marcus had attended with the interviews with, what was it, Triple H, Stone Cold, and John Cena?
Steve Austin, John Cena, and HBK, no Triple H.
HBK, yeah. Yeah, yeah, because you can't have a press conference about new technology without HB Shizzle. So look forward to that after we wrap things up here. And that's going to do it for this week. So, Marcus, where can the people follow you and check out your work?
You can follow me on Twitter at MarcoWill, MarcoWill. And I'm also on Instagram. And, I'm traveling again next week. So off to Indianapolis.
That'll be exciting.
Very, very much so.
You can follow Big Nasty and chip into his fund to get better internet service at This Is Nasty on Twitter as well. Check out his articles and videos on Bleacher Report. You can follow me at N8, MOZAIK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter as well. I am going to have a column in the very near future every Saturday, a review of TNA Impact as well as kind of what's been going on in the week for total nonstop action wrestling. And so hopefully they'll be around for a little while longer.
I'm going to laugh this column ends in March when they don't have a home to take.
Be a grand opening, grand closing. So, yeah, you can go to PlaceToBeNation.com to check that out when that launches as well. You know, all the great shows on PlaceToBeNation. PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for pop culture, news, and entertainment. And that's going to do it. First show of 2014 is in the books. Stay tuned for the wrestling interviews, and we'll be back next week with an all-new, exciting episode of the Kings of Sport. So, for Marcus Vandenberg, for Big Nasty Alfred Cunningham, I am the guy by the name Milk, and you've been down with the Kings.
got
Steve, do you think we'll see you back in WrestleMania 30?
Man, that's a real good question. Catching me off guard. I didn't even know I was going to be here until a couple of days ago. That was a true story I told down at the ranch. So who knows what 30 will bring. I got eyes and ears. I'm ready to listen and talk.
We'd love to see you back.
Hey, I'm just happy to be here. I mean, like I said up there, 10, 15 years ago, riding down the roads and doing the things that we were doing to see what this has turned into. And to see all that information come across the screen, the 100,000 hours of original content, the digital content that the WWE fan consumes, all that information was just so impressive to me. I was actually standing behind Vince when we were kind of going through stuff earlier in the night, and I slapped him on the back, and I said, man, that's impressive. And it was kind of to really shoot with you, it's a pretty emotional moment to see that it's gotten this big and see that the WWE universe and the fan base has, you know, their demand has, inspired Vince to come up with this idea, I guess.
In terms of ideas for Vince and me, where would you rank this one on paper of all the ideas he came up with in the past?
It's got to be, and this, I think it's going to be number one. I mean, but just because there's so many options here. I mean, it's like, it's so slick. It's just like YouTube plus a million. You know what I'm saying? And the way they're going to put it all together, package everything with some of the original content they're talking about giving to the fans or, you know, selling to the fans, I think it's the number one thing. And he's had some great ideas, but this is number one.
Everything affects the paper.
Hey, man, what's happening? How are you?
I'm great.
I saw your name tag out there. How are you?
I'm doing great. Doing great.
Ask me a question.
How do you think this is going to affect the pay-per-view business going forward?
Man, you're the numbers guy. You tell me. It's going to be...
It's different. It's completely different.
Yeah, it totally changes the ballgame.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, it seems like when you put the numbers to it, you know, they just had the 999 up there, but what's the 999? It's $120.
Yeah.
It's a hell of a damn savings.
Yeah, for the year.
Yeah, so it's going to be real interesting. And you know me. In a 20 by 20 squared circle, I'm damn good. But you're the math guy crunching the numbers and doing all that. What do you think?
I think it's going to be real interesting to see... You know, there's a lot of moving parts. It's something completely new.
Right.
You know, I don't know. Do you think, as far as for aspiring wrestlers, do you think that the old tape libraries, the stuff from when you were breaking in, from the 80s, all the stuff that's going to be there, that there's all kinds of things that you can learn from?
Because I think, you know, just it speeds up the process. You type in something that you want, you will find that automatically. And, yes, I think it will. I think, you and I were talking a while back. I still have to do your show. But, like a lot of Ray Stevens stuff. Yeah. I've only seen one Ray Stevens match, and I heard so much about it from everybody, about how good he was. And so to be able to access stuff like that, yeah, I think it will.
Would you be interested in doing something resembling your podcast on the network?
Hey, man, I'm all eyes and ears. I mean, you know, this is their show. It's the WWE Network. Obviously, I was a building block along the way. I'm still attached to the company. I'm eyes and ears and willing to listen.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
I mean, as a fan, for me, I go back way back to the Texas days when I started with Southwest Championship Wrestling. Favorite era for me, I guess probably when we started DX, because it seemed like we were doing something new. And at that time, when you're, I don't know, when you feel like you're doing taboo stuff and doing something that you think is very different, the business never see it, a little risky. I think that makes you creatively a little bit more into your job, and that's one of the things. You know, I don't like getting comfortable. I guess when you start to get comfortable, I think that means it might be getting boring, and we definitely didn't do that. Then we were always trying to think of something outlandish to do every week, and that was a fun process.
When you were going through that era, was there a period where in your mind you go, we've won, or we turned the corner? Because, you know, you were losing when the era
sure.
started. When was there a point that you could come up with and go, like, this is when you kind of thought, hey, we've turned the corner, we're going to win this war?
Well, you know what? I mean, I guess I was one of the few folks. I mean, you're so busy that the war, we weren't as caught up in it as far as the numbers and who's winning and who wasn't. Like, I mean, obviously it bothered you when you knew you were losing. And that made you strive to want to get better. I guess, I think probably I can remember, you know, after Montreal, everyone, I mean, that was just so big, but I can remember someone mentioning that the ratings really went up. And you couldn't help but to sense that, not just that, but controversy overall was sort of going to rule the day. And that was the only time, you know, you were so busy then that I can ever remember, you know, sort of consciously thinking about it. You know, for us, it was just a matter of going out then, especially at that time, you're young. All you're doing is working every day and busting your hump every day to do the best job you can. And so that is the first time that I remember consciously thinking about it. And I couldn't even tell you when, you know, when it was we turned the corner and everybody felt like, whatever, we'd won. And you know what I mean? I mean, for me, it was just a matter, this was more personal than just the show standpoint. You as a competitor were competing with all the other guys in the locker room and the other locker room. So you were more concerned about putting out the best product you could individually. And obviously in that era, everybody started to step up so much that it brought out the best, I think, in all of us.
What were your thoughts when you went down with the back injury? I mean, it just turned around. Everything was blown up in WWE, and you were out. I mean, did you think this was it forever, or were you planning to come back as soon as you could?
No. I mean, again, I, you know, to me, I no longer do it now. But back then, you know, a doctor tells you something, and, you know, if you're going to go to school for 50 years and you feel like, you know, compared to a guy that didn't go hardly at all, he knows more, and so he's got the final say. So for me, I thought it was over. But again, in my mind, you know, I was, you know, so personally, you know, affected by it. I didn't have the ability to think of, from a career standpoint, I'm going to miss out on this and miss out on that. You know what I mean? I was, all of that was so much more personal to me. It was hard for me to think about my job. You know what I mean? It's like being told, I don't know, something's going on in your family, but, you know, somebody wants you to think about, you know, the fact that you've got to punch the clock tomorrow. And I don't know, believe it or not, even for myself at that time, getting my act together personally far outweighed anything I thought about from a job standpoint.
John, with the new app, you would have access to all the pay-per-views, you know, all the archives. What's the one pay-per-view to go back and watch?
You know what? I mean, for me, I think if I was going to go back and watch, I'd go back and watch the last two attempts. You know what I mean? I couldn't think of a better way, you know, to tie it all up. And so that's still what was going to be a sophomore. Again, I got, when we were doing, I guess, the new Mr. WrestleMania DVD, that's the first time I ever got to see, like, a catalog of all the WrestleManias, you know, of my performances. And you sit there personally and you sort of watch this growth, not only in yourself, but in the company and in the product of the entire thing. And then you get to see the end of it and you go, well, that's pretty cool. I don't know, again, at a foundation, I get that in some respects it's sort of a silly job. But for us, when you see it like that, you know, it gets you in here a little bit. I guess that's why we did it for so long and enjoyed it so much, because there was a big heart element in it for us. And like I said, when you get to see it in front of you, it's pretty moving, and so me, I guess I like the ending the best.
Every other piece of content sounds like it's going on, so I'm sure if we have it, you'll see it on the TV.
Anything else? Any other questions? We only see each other a little bit. Any other questions?
How you feeling physically?
I feel physically great. I'm stronger than I've ever been. I just posted on Twitter at John Cena that I benched 481 pounds, and the only reason I'm very proud of that number is it's 4 months after my elbow and tricep reconstruction, so I just wanted to kind of silence anybody if they ever thought I came back too early or I'm kind of rushing, you know, what I do. I love what I do. I want to be back. I want to show everybody that I'm still going.
Is that personal best?
Yeah, it is. Personal best by 16 pounds.
Really?
What compelled you to
bench that, right?
So quickly after surgery?
I think the protocol with surgery is very loose. I think doctors are very reserved when they give you a protocol. They have to. They have to give you 6 months. They have to give you 9 months. A human knows a human's body. I know what I'm capable of, and I knew exactly when I got off the operating table that it didn't feel as bad as my other elbow, so I'd be able to be back really soon. And you want to be able to know that you still got it. When you can exceed what you've done before, I mean, this personal best was 4 or 5 years ago, so I'm stronger now. As I age, I'm like a fine wine. Everybody thinks I'm getting old, but I'm getting better and stronger. I just wanted to prove that.
On paper, this is already blowing away the UFC digital network. How do you expect this to impact other leagues in terms of how they give out digital content to their fans?
Take notice. WWE is in a class by itself. We've been around for over 50 years, and there's a reason, because we know that our fans are the reason we're here, and we always give them over-delivery. And I'm sure they'll be happy with everything the WWE Network has, and I know for a fact it will set the standard on how any other entity tries to present itself through a network platform.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's X. Like I just left.